Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. We're very happy to say hello to Monty McCutcheon, a longtime NBA official, now the vice president of official development for the NBA. And it is really good to have you on here, Monty. Thank you for joining us. And just so you know, you are among friends. We understand that you...
A referee is never among friends, Damon.
I swear to you, though, because we do appreciate that you are going to try to speak for the collective group that probably has the hardest job in officiating every night. Officiating an NBA game feels like about the hardest thing to do in officiating, with all due respect to home plate umpires everywhere.
Well, you know, I do think it's a difficult job. I think it's set up on standards, and like anything, you know, having a pair of eyes doesn't make you a referee any more than owning a camera makes you a photographer. And you have to learn a skill. You have to learn how to go about applying and adjudicating a set of standards on a nightly basis, while at the same time excluding a lot of outside noise along the lines of what Eddie Johnson just shared in his story. And how to navigate that is part of the job. You know, how we call a game, the decisions we make in calling a game are part of it, but how we articulate our decisions to game participants is also part of the job. And we work really hard at that, although we're imperfect in both cases. It's not from a lack of effort.
Monty McCutcheon here, and we were just hearing that soundbite from Eddie Johnson, and we were saying that the NBA is sort of caught in between two generations, a new generation of players and a new generation of officials, and maybe that's why we're seeing more friction than normal?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I think it's a confluence of things, quite frankly. This has been a difficult year on everybody, obviously. You know, socially and with the pandemic and the things that we're all enduring, those have a stress point to them. And then we're asked to go out and do our work as those things are in a normal situation. And we recognize that they are not. For our officials, the stress that our players and our teams and our franchises are under, our coaches, I think everyone's a little on edge. I think that that's okay. We have a passion at the NBA that we're all very proud of. Our players have a passion, our coaches and our franchises and their fan bases have a passion. Our job as officials is to rise above that passion and apply those standards. Now, obviously, our experience arc, you know, we have experience up from Kenny Maurer in the low 30s all the way down to our first year officials. And there's a wide range of learning. I would much suspect that the radio programming moves at a much slower pace for you than it would for me if I put the headset on and had to run a program today. And as we gain experience, the plays and the situations start to slow down for us. And when we see some of the mistakes that we make as officials, and we do make mistakes, although I don't think we make as many mistakes as maybe the general public thinks we do, and that's understood since we're the trained professionals. That being said, when we make those mistakes, we can often trace them back to the speed of the game or the speed of the situation escalating, being a little beyond. We talk a lot about our fundamentals, our mechanical fundamentals, that if you see a play longer, then it slows down and you have a better opportunity to get the play called correctly. The same can be true for situations when you have people coming at you in a way that and living under a scrutiny that you're not as experienced in. Learning how to navigate those situations takes learning. It takes making some mistakes. It takes talking with mentors, and it takes us in the office mentoring those situations and teaching those situations as well as we do where to stand and how to make the correct calls.
I mean, you're as aware as anybody about the Donovan Mitchell and drawing a blank here. The two ejections, oh, and Devin Booker, the two ejections over the last few days. How much of that do you view as, you know, sort of, you know, the confluence of things you talked about, plus a sense that when the season goes into the All-Star break, everybody's kind of tired, everybody's kind of on edge anyway, they want to go home, and they, you know, and I wonder if you look at those two those incidents and say, if this had happened 3 weeks ago, maybe we feel differently about it, but given the timing of the year, we get it as normal.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you have to really remind yourself and grow into in a comfortable place is that disagreement doesn't mean that anyone has to have that attached to their personality or who they are as people. We live in a competitive environment at the NBA, and it's okay to disagree about the decisions that referees. Now, ultimately, we're hoping that referees and players and coaches come to a way of disagreeing that is respectful to everyone. That's the goal every night. But as a referee, one of the great skills that I was proud to have gained over the years was this idea that if you handle a situation in game, that's where it ends. And if you build good relationships in between the potential friction, then everyone can survive the immediacy of the moment. And it's okay to have not made the right decision. Not okay, we're going to always strive and work to make the right decision, but that you can both expect and give this sense of professional forgiveness that was then, let's move on to the next game, the next situation. I know the referees and in the office, I have no, you know, animosity whatsoever at the passion that Devin or Donovan shows on a regular basis. And that's what makes them great, as well as many of our other players in the league. And if we ask them to lose that passion, I'm not sure we would respond to the game the way we do as fans and as people who love the NBA game.
I don't think anybody would debate that the sort of landing space for a jump shooter foul, although I think we all understand the intentions, has led to a lot of shooter behavior specifically aimed at getting that foul call. Is that something you view as, hey, those are just situations where the player is tricking the referee and they're not seeing it properly? Or is it being called correctly and it would have to be a rule change to sort of fix what I think a lot of people see as an issue?
Yeah, in some situations, it's a combination of both, I think. We as referees do get fooled from time to time. But we do have standards that are in play right now that we have to recognize how the game is evolving and changing. The game is played in space now. For me, at the age I am, I came into the league when the game was very congested. The game, you had 10 players below the free throw line. And you played from the inside back out to the outside. You'd drop it down into Hakeem or Charles, and they would wait for the double team, and then they would kick out for open jump shots. But now we realize that the vast majority, if you watch an NBA game, is played above the free throw line. All the picks, many of the picks are set above the free throw line. And our players, as defensive players, are being asked to play in space. When you combine that with innovative offensive moves, that in the past, when you looked at Michael or Kobe, they would take fallaways. Now we take step backs, and that's creating an evolution of how players are coming together. If you fade away, a defender can contest on the same arc, and there's no contact. There's rarely contact. If, however, you take a step back, and now the defensive player has to close that ground moving forward, the offensive player, by the time he's finished his step back, is no longer fading away. And they're taking a normal vertical shot while you have a defensive player jumping forward. Now, where it gets into what you're describing is if I've gotten the defender in a forward-moving A to B position that's compromised, can I create contact? And that's what we're seeing. And in some cases, the way the rule is written right now, there is allowable contact. If I jump straight to the basket to shoot, and that contact occurs with the defender having already jumped 3 feet forward, that defender is in a compromised position. The competition committee, which is coaches, players, general managers, and owners, are looking at this because we do want to get it right. We want to make sure that the game is played and not the, you know, played by trying to score and trying to do the things that make NBA basketball great. Analytics shows us that free throws are good basketball from a efficiency standpoint. That doesn't always come to agreement with our visual view of the game. And we'll have to catch up with that. And we're in the process of exploring this part of the game so that we can serve the game as officials in an effective way.
Monty McCutcheon, longtime NBA official and VP of official development for the NBA, joining us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. And Monty, I think that there is nothing more that does NBA officials a disservice than the day after we're complaining and screaming at you because you ejected a favorite player because he picked up a second tech. The first one might have been a cheapie. The second one was deserved, but because the first one was triggered, now we got an ejection. I'm not here to just complain, Monty. I'm a problem solver. May I try to solve a problem for you?
You give. I can tell you're...
Yeah, I'm a giver. I'm a giver. I got a million-dollar idea. How about this? Second technicals no longer trigger an automatic ejection. Have we ever considered this? Maybe stack up technical after you tee them up, tee them up, tee them up, tee them up. You won't shut up. Here's another one. Now they're taking six free throws. You want any more? It's kind of like the detention scene in Breakfast Club where he's like, you want another? I want another. I want another. You want another? Like unlimited technicals, like a buffet at Golden Corral. Could we do that?
Well, first of all, I want to compliment you on the first in 2020-21 on Breakfast Club and sports analogies. I don't think that that's taken place yet. I think that what we want when we give technical fouls is not this idea that how dare you talk to me that way. One of the things that I've really preached since taking on this role is that technical fouls are no different than hand checking or post play. We have standards. And the role of the technical foul is to get the focus back on what it should be, the game, and the excellence of our players and the excellence of our teams. And as such, we want to make sure that the technical foul has a use other than just personal punitive, you know, retribution. And that's not what it's designed for. And I think that scenario would lend itself potentially to this idea of it becoming a farce and it becoming personal between players and referees in that one way. Do you want another? Do you want another? And we want the focus to be on the game. We have the best athletes in the world. We have the best people in the world. And I've been on record as saying I think our players and our coaches are not only the best at what they do, but they're the best people. And I just don't think that the few opportunities that bring up tension represent who they are 99% of the time. And that's due to the competition. We want that passion because that's what drives our game, and it's good. And we can all work on good relationships to get past those moments.
As a general rule, would you agree that, A, the last thing an official masters is player interaction, and B, if that's so, one, how long did it take you to become comfortable, talking with players as opposed to disciplining them? And two, what are the methods you use to try to fast track somebody who might be in his fifth or sixth year and, you know, is still sort of struggling with the, you know, with that part, with the interpersonal part of the game?
Well, I think if it's not the last thing you master, it's one of the last things you master. There's a lot that goes into that. Younger referees, because they are new and new faces, are tested more than older referees. They haven't earned those relationships yet because they haven't had the time to build them up. And as such, you are taking it more every night. And if that's the case, it's harder to get comfortable in your own skin, and you tend to drift towards defensiveness. And we've really worked hard on communication since taking this role. Our developmental advisors are all ex-finals officials that deal with a set of officials. That's Joey Crawford, Mark Wunderlich, E.F. Rush, Bernie Fryer, Bennett Salvatore, and they each have 10 or 15 officials. And this idea of how to interact with players is a big part of our curriculum. One of the things that we've really tried to impart to our referees is this idea that the league needs to know who you are. You can't just play the role of official. You have to be Monty McCutchen, who happens to be an official. And if you're putting up these defenses, these professional walls, that you're just going to authoritatively run a game, then you're missing the opportunity to build relationships. If you build the right kind of relationships in the NBA, someone can disagree with you while still believing in you. And that's one of the goals that we strive for in our fourth and fifth and sixth years and teaching those young referees, is that you're wanting to get to the point where you've built up such good relationships that if we disagree about this call, we can just limit it to this call. And it doesn't have anything to do with some of the greater narratives that get, you know, espoused out there.
Monty, we really thank you for your time this afternoon. This has been great. This has been illuminating. Again, $1 million idea. I'm just going to give it to you if you want to use it. It's out there for you. Final question.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, final question. Do all NBA officials hate Draymond Green, or is it just like half?
None hate Draymond Green. Draymond's got a great personality, and he's got a great passion for this game, and I wouldn't change one thing about him.
Monty, we wouldn't change anything about you. Thank you so very much for today's conversation.
Thank you for having me. Y'all have continued success.